Hey there, Mike.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I am very well. All the better for talking to you, of course.
Oh, aren't you a sweetie? today we have on the show Mr. C.J. Chilvers, most bestly known, and that is a word, I checked it in the dictionary, look it up, for his work on A Lesser Photographer, which is very much in line with what we believe in around these parts. He recently came out with his Lesser Photographer Manifesto, which is a free PDF download, and is a must read. That is required reading, folks. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes, and you cannot move until you read it. Okay, you can move now. Hey, CJ, what's up?
At least move their eyes, right? That'd be a little hard to read.
You can blink. You can blink. Yeah, they can at least move their eyes left to right or right to left if for the Hebrew version. And it is available in Hebrew, correct?
Oh, of course.
How are you? So I wanted to get you on to talk for a long time because I followed your site, A Lesser Photographer, for a long time. Like I think you had like maybe three posts on it when I started following it or something like that. I mean it was like less than a page. Was really immediately intrigued by your philosophy and the idea that the camera and the gear and the equipment, while nice, doesn't matter. That anyone can take a great photo with a reasonably decent camera. As a matter of fact, anyone can take a great photo with a bad camera if you have the right skills. Idea of enough brought to cameras. You want to talk a little bit about that and kind of where you're coming from with that?
No, I want to keep hearing compliments.
Awesome.
Yeah, really, this what it started out was as a challenge to myself. I had all of these, you know, expensive DSLRs and medium format cameras, and I thought to myself, what if I just sold off everything, got a really simple compact camera, could just creativity alone produce better pictures than what I was getting from all this fancy equipment? And so that started off, it was maybe 2 years ago now, and I've just been blogging everything I've learned along the way, and this new manifesto is kind of like, you know, a summary of the most important principles that I've learned from it.
So yeah. Photography for you is a hobby, or is it a profession?
I have made money on it in the past, but I'd never consider myself a professional.
Right, okay.
Now I'm a writer.
I'm wondering if you ever will consider yourself, at what point would one consider themselves? I suppose you consider yourself a professional when it's what you do as a profession, right?
Right. I think the technical definition is just whenever the majority of your money is coming from it.
Yeah. So, it's not about the gear, but I'm curious. What was that compact camera that you started off with when you were starting your blog?
It was a Canon S90, which is it's a really, really nice camera with, you know, good low light capabilities that you can put in your pocket. And that was the most important part to me. I wanted to go places and do things to experience the places, and then have a camera there instead of the other way around.
Yeah, it's really pocketable, as my memory serves me. I'm not looking it up right now, but it's about maybe a couple of iPhone 4s thick, but even slightly smaller lengthwise.
There's been two iterations since then of the camera. I don't know how the new ones stack up.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I've just been using the
iPhone.
Are you
still rocking that camera?
No, mostly iPhone.
Okay. Well, there
you
go.
Yeah. And the reason for that is just because that fits what I need. And, you know, the technical specs that everybody always, you know, goes crazy about, what really matters is what your personal output is. And for me, I don't print my pictures anymore. And, you know, the output that I'm concerned about is more about emotion, really, than technical specs.
Yeah, capturing a moment or capturing a time, you know, capturing an image that makes you experience something, that gives you that emotion, right?
Right, and what could be better than the iPhone for that? It's always with you. You know, it's super easy, one button.
Yep. Yeah, and the camera's decent. We've talked about this before. I've taken some great photos even with my iPhone 3G, like even before the iPhone 4 or the 4S. My iPhone 3G, I took some great photos with that. Photos I'm really happy with. Was proud to post on the web and proud to say, yeah, I took that. You know, and I think that no matter what the camera is, that's what you're going for, right?
Right. The most popular photo book of iPhone photos, called "The Best Camera Is the One That's With You," that was all done with the 3GS, I believe.
Yeah. That's why is his name escaping?
Chase Jarvis.
Chase Jarvis, right? Is that the right name?
Yeah, Chase Jarvis the other CJ, as I call him.
Yeah, the other CJ. So, what would you? I mean, do you still use your SLRs? I mean, is there an appropriate time and place for the expensive stuff?
Yeah. Usually, when you're a professional and you have a client to deliver for, you want all kinds of automation in what you do. What I'm mostly speaking towards is the people who don't have clients and who are more interested in the art of photography and how to expand their creativity. And you want as little automation as possible when you're talking about that. You want to put more thought into what you're doing. So, the less controls, the better.
Yeah. Well, and I think about myself personally, and I take most of the pictures I take with my iPhone 4, and I think that's pretty much everyone who has an iPhone would probably say that, or any sort of smartphone. But I have a Nikon D40, SLR. It's not, it's your kind of entry level prosumer SLR from the, from what, 5 years ago now or so.
Snap that. I have one too.
Yeah.
That's
what
I
see.
Have.
Yeah. And it's great, and I love it. And I used to have an extra lens for it, but right now I only just have the kit lens. This, 70-200 or whatever it is that, kind of comes with the kit. And I find that while I certainly, don't have that with me all the time, I'm not using a lot, there are occasions when I say, okay, this is a special occasion, and I want to have something more than the iPhone. I want to have an SLR. I want to have that speed. Or for some cases, I want to, I like the rapid shot feature of an SLR that, get that noise going or whatever.
Or you just don't want it to look whenever there's a flash on that somebody's just turned on, like a lighthouse somewhere.
Yes, exactly. I mean, but I have found, at least for myself, that there are occasions when the SLR is, I think, the right choice. Not necessarily, like, it's not like I couldn't use the iPhone if I wanted to, but it's that I wouldn't think that the iPhone is appropriate for the occasion. Does that make sense?
Right. And
or is the best choice for the occasion?
Well, you hit on a very good word there, appropriate. I'm very much against appropriatism when it comes to creativity. When we're talking about business systems and we're talking about processes, you know, you want everything as smooth as possible and what's appropriate. But when it comes to creativity, your brain is going to always seek the path of least resistance. And that's like, I know you were talking in the podcast that just aired today about the book Do the Work. And that book is all about that. Your brain wants to produce safe, easy fluff. It's geared towards that. You really have to work hard to train your brain not to. And one easy way to do that is through constraints. You know, it may be appropriate to take an SLR somewhere, but you may get better, more creative shots not using one. It all depends on where that switch is in your brain that turns off the automation and turns on the thinking. It's different for everybody. I wouldn't begrudge, you know, somebody just for using an SLR or anything. It's just for me that, you know, that it has to be a lot simpler for that, for my brain to feel some pain and start thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about the idea of... Let me bring the question back to this. I think the reason that I would choose the SLR in those occasions, or the reasons that I do, is that I'm looking for a picture to be perfect. You know what I mean? That I have this kind of standard in my head as to what that is, and that I know that my iPhone can't meet that, won't meet that level of perfection. But here's the thing, and that is that some of my favorite pictures that I've taken with my iPhones, I think are great because of the imperfections.
Right, exactly.
Because it's slightly out of focus, or, you know, it's not as sharp as it could be, or I don't have that, you know, that kind of sweet bokeh that I would get in a, you know, portrait on an SLR.
It's like the
50 millimeter lens, or
it's like the Ansel Adams quote that I keep using. It's there's nothing worse than a sharp picture of a fuzzy idea.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Exactly. But I think that there's an important part to, you know, being okay with the imperfection. And in fact, there's a whole other movement of photography, you know, whole other, you know, kind of side trend that goes the opposite direction with, you know, the folks that are, you know, toy camera freaks, you know, the Lomographers and the Diana freaks and the, you know, the freaks about toy cameras. I mean, Lomo has pretty much built an entire business around, you know, taking crappy shots, right? Not necessarily crappy shots, but, you know, but taking fuzzy, you know, fuzzy shots of great ideas. Does that make sense?
But you can extend that as well, like to apps like Instagram.
Yeah, and that's,
you know, they're now making a business on that.
Yeah, to me, my goal as a photographer is to get good enough so I can always be in the right place at the right time and know how to capture what's in front of me, not to throw a bunch of crap on it afterwards. You know, and you said something a few minutes ago, Patrick, that was right on. You have a vision before you go into something, and that's something, and that, you know, photographers don't do that anymore. That used to be very common in the age of film because film was expensive. You went into something and you pre-visualized what you wanted, and then you tried to make that happen. But we just, you know, we don't do that anymore in the digital age because pictures are cheap. We edit afterwards.
Well, yeah, I think ultimately, I mean, so everyone who knows me, this should come as no surprise. My favorite subject is my daughter, Beatrice, right? And ultimately, what I am looking to do, whether it's with my iPhone or with an SLR or with anything, is to recreate the emotion and beauty that I get just looking at her. Right? That I want to capture that. That's what I'm looking. It's not so much the photo that I'm interested in. What I'm trying to capture is the totality of the experience. And
so you don't need it to look like a 70s Polaroid.
I don't need it to look like a 70s Polaroid, no.
Right.
But what I do, but what I am trying to capture, and I think that this is, I guess, one of the reasons why in certain circumstances the SLR is the right choice, because there's no viewfinder on my iPhone. It's not, I can't look through the lens. Does that make sense? In the same way. And in some cases, the SLR is an extension of my eye. In some circumstances, more so than the iPhone allows me to be. I'm not sure if that's coming out right. but you get what I'm saying, right?
Right, I get what you're saying. You're looking to... I mean, there's a difference between documenting something and documenting something differently. There's a difference between pointing a camera at something and then, or thinking about it and putting your own little touch on it, which you may or may not want to do. It depends on your goals as a photographer.
Right. And that those goals are the same no matter what camera you're using, right? The camera's just a tool. I guess that's the base of what I was trying to say, is that the camera is a tool to be an extension of my eye, to capture what my eye captures, to capture what my heart captures, right? And that tool could be anything, but it's the capturing that's the thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I would say that because it's a creative endeavor, just capturing something, there comes a point where you want to do more than just capture. You want to have a vision and see it through. You want to interpret. You want to put your own stamp on things. And I can understand totally when it's your child and you want to click away so you don't miss something. But that's very different than, approaching it as, I want to just see it from a different angle.
Yeah.
I want to be different than, the millions of others doing the same thing. You may not want to.
That's another point that you bring up in your manifesto that I wanted to get to real quick. Not to change tracks or change subjects, but I really like your suggestion about... and I think you were speaking specifically about, or using specifically tourism as an example, where you're going and everyone's going to take the same shot of the Eiffel Tower, right? And what, and to think about, okay, how could I look at this from a completely different way that no one has ever thought of before, and bringing an element of creativity, as opposed to just, snapping the same post, because otherwise just go buy a postcard because everyone has taken that same shot and it's on 50 postcards, take your pick. And that's a far better picture than you're ever going to achieve. But if you can kind of bring a new eye to it and say, ooh, how has someone not approached this? Whether it be, some close-up shot of a rivet, or something, am I capturing that idea right?
Right. It's the idea of pre-editing. Why, spend your time in a place where everybody else is when there might be something more interesting, to catch your eye somewhere else. I think I put in the manifesto, what my photography professor from college used to say was that if you're facing the sunset, turn around and take a picture of whatever's behind you, because chances are it's more interesting and it's better lit and nobody else will be taking it.
And it's less of a cliche.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And, cliche is the death of art, really, because... art's all about presenting something something new and original to the world.
Yeah.
Even if it's an amalgamation of other, you know, copied things from other artists.
So everybody that listens, every single person out who is listening right now, has a phone camera. Every single one, I know it. And I'm joking, of course. What would you recommend to those folks that don't have the SLR, that have the you know, crappy phone camera, or they have just a basic, you know, compact camera that they got on fire sale at Amazon? How does one get better? How does one
improve challenge them
the shots that they're taking?
I would challenge them to just find wherever the resistance is for them, and exploit that. Another thing I go over in the manifesto is about what constraints really mean to an artist. And this can be any kind of art. It doesn't have to be photography. It could be writing. I bring up filmmaking in that, you know, when you're constrained by resources and money and all that kind of stuff, you come up with something like Star Wars: A New Hope. When you're totally unconstrained, have all the money, time, and resources in the world, you come up with Jar Jar Binks. And it's really true. It's true of any art form. And you can, you know, think of how many bands that's true of, where, you know, their first albums, they have a couple of days in the studio, they have no money, and they just produce these great albums, and then later on in the career, they spend a year in the studio, and they come up with, you know, mediocre at best.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that that such constraints are important. I mean, but would you argue that there are certain kind of, you know, basic photography lessons, like, you know, the rule of thirds and all that? I mean, what do you think
of
these kind of just like, you know, general good photography knowledge, like, you know, kind of the top five things that,
well, that's,
you know,
one of the principles,
great photo should know.
That's one of the principles in the book, that you should be spending your money on learning and experiencing and less on gear. You know, for the price of a, you know, prosumer camera body, you could take a really nice trip somewhere you've never been and just, you know, photograph the hell out of it. Or you can take a lesson. You can go to a photography workshop in a place you've never been and learn so much from a person who's been doing it 30 years. You know, it's just you got to have that priority there to know what's important. And gear is always a quick answer, but it's usually not the right answer.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Well, thanks a lot for being on. I really appreciate it, and been meaning to have you on for quite some time. And I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan, right? You know, I'm a big fan of yours, and a big fan of not just, you know, not just the blog and Lesser Photographer and the manifesto and that stuff, but I mean, I got to have you back on to talk about Van Halen. I mean, you know, I mean, that's kind of how we kind of first met, was we were following each other and I said something about Van Halen, and you tweeted back something like, "Well, you must have read my book." I'm like, "What? What book?" So real quick, while we're wrapping this up, CJ wrote the Van Halen Encyclopedia. Yes. Yes, the literal Van Halen Encyclopedia. And it is awesome. It is just, if you are even the least bit of a Van Halen fan, it contains every single minute detail you could possibly ever want to know. You know, almost down to the picks that Eddie uses. It's just insane.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was kind of insane.
So, yeah, well. But we will, you know.
And I've been a huge fan of yours for even, you know, much longer. And, you know, the way this whole this thing started, where you kind of kicked my butt really into finishing this book. And, you know, I had a week off from work in the summer. And I just decided, you know, one of the things I wanted to do with that week is go up to Minnesota, have lunch with you, and talk about this book. And it turned in, you know, I figured it was going to be like a half-hour lunch. Turned into 3 hours. We talked about everything and really kicked my book, my butt into getting this book done, even though it could have been, you know, much longer. It could have been, you know, like a Seth Godin-like book with principles followed up by endless evidence. But, you know, it's just that other principle, getting it done and getting it out the door, really helped out.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I was able to help, and that should serve as warning to anybody that there is no such thing as a quick lunch with Patrick Brown. So if you book that, you better be ready. You better clear your schedule, because I'm going to be talking. So, speaking of which, we should probably wrap this up before Mike kills us both.
Never. CJ, we're going to have you back to talk to do an Enough episode. You're a new guest, so you need your Enough With episode.
Yes.
Yes, sounds great.
You need to do that.
So don't go anywhere for the next 2 days.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll talk later then, I guess.
Okay.
Well,
cheers.
All right.
Bye. Cheers. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.